I don't know how Marla got us a gig at the University of Illinois, but that was some fast, easy, good money. Philip Graham was there, and he was very encouraging. He bought an extra copy of The Unknown to send to Ralph Berry in Tallahassee. It was on account of Philip Graham that Scott and I met, and I told him that then. Back one day in the early 90s when I was working in restaurants and writing like the Dickens, I stopped by Philip Graham's office in the U of I English building, and he gave me a copy of Grand Street with a story by Crass Mueller, which had the phrase, quote, medieval California fluorescent basin, unquote, something like that. And Philip Graham said, how would you like to study with this guy? Beats working, I thought, but I didn't want to say anything because I didn't want to taint my dear mentor Philip's upcoming sabbatical. We read at the Center for Advanced Study. Dirk spilled punch on Lawrence Lieberman, but said it was an accident. The Schnierz people gave us a prize that we had to lie to get. Then we met for beer and discourse with Carrie Nelson and Michael Berube, who had some interest in the project. Richard Powers was there, too. He was very talkative.
The Bread Company is a vaguely hoity-toity establishment where we had fondue and beer with Michael Berube and Carrie Nelson. They've got a nice selection of breads, beers, fruits, and cheeses. William had some kind of black beer. I think that's what it was called, too, black beer. While Dirk, I, and Berube each had fine foaming mugs of Alpha King Ale. Big pint glasses, chilled. We weren't just having beer with Nelson and Berube because they were left-wing intellectuals who generally sympathized with our goals in terms of restructuring American society. We wanted to talk to them, and they wanted to talk to us because they were literary critics, and every movement needs a couple decent critics to describe how important it is to society as a whole, and to assure that the work of its writers will be taught well after the writers themselves are dead.
There was only one thing we agreed on. We were rabid socialists to a man. Red lions given to rallying and Stein-clashing. We lived by slogans. We would baffle Republicans with our iron-fisted proclamations that the United States of America was a socialist state to the core and always had been. Question was, at whose expense? Free land to white men, immigrant labor. But if someone triggered Dirk's sentiments over Southern comfort, he might rail from a bar stool, waving a copy of Her Land. Public transportation, national parks and libraries. We knew that experimental literature owed a lot to public funding, public universities and their presses, the NEA, the IAC, and, we cannot stress this enough, public libraries, state-funded repositories of state-funded lit. Kurt White had a job and could afford to write, and we couldn't be happier. A few authors managed to stay out of academe, DeLillo, Auster, Gaddis, McCarthy, but they are increasingly the exception. Not that being deep-fried in theory has a positive effect on everyone's writing. When we founded The Unknown, Rettberg was working for Amoco, and I had been proofreading speeches of football coaches. An impossible job, given that even the name of the publishing company I worked for had a typo in it, and no proofreader who wants to keep working would dare point out a fact like that. Coach's choice, no apostrophe. We were raving, man. Our project depended on the state, and that was as it should be. We were fucking writing the man? No, we were fucking writing the literature to usher America into the second millennium. America had a hypertext that was being browsed worldwide. There were rumors that Scholes had a paper in the works about us because we were the shit. We were good old Yankee know-how applied to the electronic medium of the next 1,000 years. We were American. We were making the most of it because America was the wealthiest, mightiest, and most wretched and disliked and humiliated and self-loathing nation on earth.